Hey friends, you're listening to Changing the Conversation, a podcast by African Leadership and the Mocha Club, where we take time to sit down and explore topics to challenge our perspective in pursuit of better loving people and the world around us. Say, I am so excited for you to come on the podcast today. For those listening, you are going to be hearing from author Shannon Martin. And she has been a longtime Mocha Club member, as we were saying, a dear friend of the organization for many years. She just even traveled with the Mocha Club over to Ethiopia to visit our partners. So she's seen a lot of our work. But most importantly, we are excited to chat with Shannon about her new book that she just released this week, The Ministry of Ordinary Places. I actually got my copy the day it released. I'm only four chapters in, and I highlight with a colored pencil, and literally most of the pages are more colored than white because there are so many things that you say that I'm a big quote person, and you have so many just like great little snippet quotes that are just like so inspiring. So my book is just line after line of just these awesome.
I'm a huge underliner, so yes. I feel that love.
yes, totally. So we're excited to talk about her book and just what inspired it. Shannon talks about just loving the people around you really well, loving your neighbors who may look like you, but also may look a lot different from you. And how are we called into loving people no matter if they look like us or not? So it'll be a great conversation. Our podcast is called Changing the Conversation. And so we always take topics that we kind of want to flip on the head of just how do we typically look at the world and how can we challenge that perspective in a new way that in the end will make us better, not even just in ourselves, but in the way we interact with other people. So I think you do that really well, just from what I see on social media and your life that you share online. I think that you are changing the conversation in many ways, and it's really inspiring. And so I think it's a gift to be able to hear from you.
Yes, I love this.
I feel like we've known each other for many years through the computer and online, and so it's really sweet to see your face and feel like we're in the same room, kind of.
I know. Have we ever met in person?
You know, I don't think we have. So I came on to Mocha Club the summer that y'all were putting the Boggable trip together.
Okay.
And so I learned of you quickly just from joining the team then, but I don't think we ever met, which that was 5 years ago, which is crazy.
It was the first year that we lived in this neighborhood.
Really?
Yeah. We've been here for 6 years now, so that would make sense.
Okay. And so, yeah, tell me how you first heard about Mocha Club and how you got involved.
Yeah. I was at a conference in Indianapolis ages ago, and it was with Haley Morgan and Jess Conley. I forget what they...
The Influence called. Conference? Yes.
And so it was fairly local for me. I'm in Indiana, so I went down for that. I think it was like their second or third year doing it. And I met Marissa and Barrett.
Yes.
At Influence. And then it wasn't too long after that that they put Bloggable together. You know, in the next couple of years, we did that. So that was how they landed on my radar.
Okay.
And I loved them both instantly. Yes. So
obviously, both of them are working full time at Able, but I miss them dearly. Yeah. They're such sweet friends. Okay, so first off, paint a little picture for our listeners, just what life looks like for you, your family, where you live, just so we know kind of where you're coming from.
Yeah, so my husband, Corey, and I, we do have four kids, and all of our kids came to us through adoption. So they each have, you know, very unique and special stories. We live in Goshen, Indiana. We moved here about 6 years ago, and just to back up a little step, we had come from a very country rural setting. That's where we thought that we wanted to be forever. You know, that was we were kind of living our dream, living in a beautiful farmhouse, and plans changed. You know, that's the way that life goes, and that's the way that our faith impacts our lives often.
Right.
And so we did end up picking up and moving our family not far away. You know, we're still in the same county, but we did move from the country into a very ordinary, kind of shabby, a low-income neighborhood in a nearby city.
Okay.
And so we've been living this neighborhood life now for 6 years, and we absolutely love it. It has changed everything about our lives. You know, our neighbors have absolutely changed our lives. A couple of years into moving over here, my husband, Corey, became the chaplain of the county jail.
Oh, so how cool.
That was just, you know, another layer deeper. So we just, you know, we're really lucky that we get to live our lives with a really diverse and rich and wonderful group of people.
Amazing. So what initiated the move?
You know, it was actually a sermon series that we listened to, as dramatic as that sounds.
Wow.
That's pretty powerful, because we had never had anything like this happen to us before. But it was actually the sermon series that became the book Radical,
okay,
by David Platt.
Okay.
And for anybody who has heard of that, I mean, it was a pretty popular book, you know, a handful of years ago.
Okay.
And, you know, just kind of a call to really love the poor, to love the people at the margins. And it really rattled us in a lot of ways, because, you know, we had both grown up in the church forever and kind of thought that we were right on track and thought we were really living the way that we should be living. And so for us, it was just a jarring moment of realizing we were missing some key things. And for us, it meant moving. That's not to say that you have to move in order to love the poor. You know, I think that's something we can all do in a lot of different ways, no matter where we are. But for us, at that point, we kind of knew that God had more for us, and that God's more for us was going to look like less.
Wow.
And so, you know, our jobs really shifted, our income shifted. We did move. We moved into a much smaller home, you know, in a lot of ways where we had always kind of climbed that ladder and, you know, kind of done that American dream with the sight of Jesus thing.
Right.
We felt really like, you know, now was the time for us to kind of back down off of that ladder. And instead of climbing, we started sort of digging, you know, just getting low to the ground. So it's been quite an adventure.
Sounds like you're just very obedient to a call to make a change. And I know I've had moments in my life where I felt like the Lord is kind of nudging at something, but it was easy to be like, eh, no, or like not be obedient to that nudge. And it's just really inspiring to hear that you responded to that in a huge way. Like, moving is huge. That's a huge response.
It really confused a lot of the people in our life.
Sure.
It's a lot of just, you know, misunderstanding. And I have to say, I think God will do what he needs to do to get our attention. And so I don't feel like we were, you know, ultra obedient per se. I feel like he got pretty loud and in our face about what needed to happen. So yeah, it was a long process too. It didn't happen overnight. And most of the time, as much as, you know, we felt like God was sort of backing us into a corner in some ways and making it a bit easier for us to make that decision, it was also really, you know, just one step at a time, just kind of one step in this direction without knowing what the end game was going to look like.
Sure.
And over the span of a couple of years, a lot of this stuff happened. And so it just kind of unfolded in some pretty slow and ordinary ways.
And how old are your kids? Like, how old were they at this point of the move?
When we moved, we only had three.
Okay.
So Calvin was in second grade. Ruby was just starting kindergarten. And then Silas was just starting preschool.
Okay. So they're younger.
Yeah. And so now Calvin's 13, Ruby's 12, and Silas is 10.
Okay.
So this is very much, you know, especially for the younger two, this is all they really know.
Right, right. Well, I was going to ask, as you moved, was there a point where you kind of had to explain to them, like, we really feel called to move? But I guess they were pretty young at that point.
Well, and you know, kids are resilient. That is true.
Right.
And they handled it, you know, really well. But there was, I mean, I think, you know, transition is in some ways hard for kids. It's hard for them to understand.
Sure.
And we moved from a really beautiful, idyllic, peaceful, you know, this large piece of property, nobody real close to us, you know, in proximity, you know, we were surrounded by cornfields, basically. And so they did have a different kind of life there. Sure. There were cats involved. You know, we had barn cats that couldn't come to the city with us.
Aww.
That was hard. Finding new homes for the kitties.
Sure.
And just switching schools for our second grader. We had lived in a community where he went to school with his cousin, who's his same age and who is, you know, really his best friend. And so that was, okay. You know, there were these things along the way that were hard. But, you know, we got to our neighborhood, and in so many ways, our kids sort of led the way for us. Mm-hmm. You know, our neighborhood is largely Latino. None of us really speak Spanish, so there was kind of some language barrier. And it was amazing to see the kids, you know, our next door neighbors who were also much younger at the time and didn't know English yet. But man, the kids just, they just rolled with it. They just
right.
started playing. They didn't let it get in their way.
Oh,
and
it
was a really great example for Corey and I to just like relax and take a breath and, you know, not get caught up in the details of what
yes.
this was going to look like.
Yes. And our kids like that. Like they just see past language. They see past
culture.
They see past everything. And
they just
see like
play.
Someone to play with. This is
yes.
great. Oh, yep. gosh. It is such a beautiful picture. I think in the Bible, you know, the Lord talks about have faith like a child. And I think
yeah.
he also is saying, just be like children. See
right.
everyone as just someone to play with and someone
yeah.
to enjoy life with. And
totally. Yeah. You know, in any of the areas where it was hard for my kids to move, it was the neighbors and the neighbor kids who kind of healed that, you
wow.
know, so
yeah.
where they knew that they were leaving certain things behind. Now, for the first time, they had neighbor kids to play with.
Yeah.
And that went a really long way for
okay.
them. That was a huge gift to our family.
Yeah.
And those same neighbors are they're still here, you know, so our kids are just growing up together and it's fun to be a part of that.
I want to ask you about your kids furthermore. Did you always know you're going to adopt?
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, like I was not the girl who was, all I want to do is be a mom.
Yeah.
When Corey and I were first married, we weren't even really ready to start thinking about a family until years into being married. And so, okay. you know, we were actually living in Washington, D.C. at the time. Corey was working on Capitol Hill and I was working close by at a political think tank, and we were living in this very different setting than anywhere we had lived before. And that's when we started feeling like, okay, you know, we're ready to start a family. And I just assumed, you know, when you're ready, you do.
Yeah.
So we didn't know that we would be handed the gift of infertility. You know,
mm-hmm.
that's not trouble that we had borrowed.
Mm-hmm.
But when we faced infertility and we went through some treatment, you know, we went down that road a little bit and just pretty clearly knew that we were going to kind of switch gears and move towards adoption, which is not something we had planned. It's not something that we knew a lot about.
Right.
And, you know, Calvin's 13 now. So 14 or 15 years ago, adoption was different than it is now. I mean, it just wasn't.
Yeah.
And social media, you know, the internet, the world was different enough that I didn't really even know many people who had adopted.
Mm.
I mean, now it feels like it's a lot more prevalent and,
right.
you know, you can find your people. And back then it was just different. So that was our first big surprise in life. The first big thing that was like, okay, we're not as much in control of life as we thought we were.
Right.
But what a surprise. If you're going to be surprised by something, let it be adoption. This is the way that God does take broken things and kind of patch them back together. So
yes.
we're really grateful.
That's awesome. I love how you explain it, the gift of infertility. That's just,
yeah.
it's a beautiful way to look at it. I have two dear friends that both has gone through that of infertility, and they now have two children. Each of them have one that are adopted, and just walking through that with friends. I'm single,
yeah.
And so I am not at that stage of life of knowing if I
yeah.
will be able to be a mom naturally or not.
Right.
But it's been a gift for me to get to walk through their stories
yeah.
of infertility, and then again, adoption. And gosh, it's hard, but it's beautiful.
Right. I mean, yeah, I don't want to make light of the suffering of infertility.
Right.
But we know that suffering is its own kind of gift.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
So we know that there's a lot to be learned. Now I look at my kids and it's like, of course I can't imagine my life any other way.
Yes.
Yes. And I, you know, we're really careful in our family to not minimize the grief mm-hmm. and the loss that our kids face because of their stories, you know, through no control of their own, and to really tread cautiously on how we talk about it, how we think about it. You know, the truth is they made me a mom and I'm forever grateful. Mm-hmm. But the truth is also that they lost a lot along the way. And so we want to always really honor the sadness with the celebration, because as most things in life, it's a little bit of both.
So how old were they when you adopted them? Were they babies? Were they older?
Calvin wasn't, he was 4 months old. He was born in South Korea.
Okay.
And then Ruby was born locally in the area. We have an open adoption with her birth mom. You know, I was in the delivery room when she was born.
Uh-huh.
So we had her from birth. And then Silas was also born in South Korea, and he was 18 months old.
Okay.
So he was a baby, but in a lot of ways, he felt like a teenager compared to the first two. You know, when you have an 18-month-old like walking and talking, and that was a whole different thing. And then a year after we moved here to the neighborhood, it was around the time that I was in Ethiopia.
Oh, wow.
With Abel and Mocha Club. We were kind of in process then, because I remember talking about it with that group. Now that I think about it, we adopted our fourth kiddo, and his name is Robert. And at the time, he was 19 and he was in jail.
Wow. Okay.
Yes. It was like a huge surprise. So he's 24 now.
Okay.
You know, he's grown.
Sure.
He was a literally big surprise in our family. He's very tall.
Yeah. Are you and your husband tall or shorter?
Corey is about 6 foot tall. Robert is like 6'4".
Oh my gosh.
So he's just a giant. Life is just such a hilarious surprise sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny because when he came into our family and, you know, we began visiting him at the jail, that was Corey and I's first encounter with jail at all.
Okay.
And then, you know, a year or two after that, Corey became the chaplain of that jail. So it's kind of another one of those things that's like, you know, in hindsight, you can kind of see how everything was sort of fitting together along the way. Walking with Robert, and still, you know, this is 6 years later, and he is still really struggling to come out from under the criminal justice system. He's still on probation. It feels like he will be on probation forever. And it's been, you know, it's been really eye-opening and heartbreaking and frustrating. And we're really proud of him. We're really proud of how he's, you know, kind of walking through all of that.
Awesome. That's so great. Well, I can already hear in different things that you're sharing about your life, areas that you're living out of ministry in ordinary places.
Yeah.
I understand why you wrote a book about it, because I see these multiple places in your life where you're doing it. So let's dive into the book first. Congratulations.
Well, thank you.
This is book release week. How does it feel? Yeah.
It feels good. It feels, you know, today's Friday. And so I'm like, okay, like, I don't know where the week went, because it feels like it was just Tuesday and now it's Friday. So it's been a really fun week. We're tired. The house is a mess, but life is good.
Yes. You know what? You can clean up later. You got to
celebrate
this week. It's huge. This is your first published book, correct?
This is second.
Oh, your second. Okay.
Yep.
What's your first one called?
Falling Free.
Okay.
Rescued from the Life I Always Wanted. So that first book came out 2 years ago, and that book gives a lot of the backstory.
Got it.
So anybody who's interested in like, wait, how did you, you know, that book is really telling the story of us going from the farm to the city, adopting Robert, moving into the jail, you know, work at the jail. So yeah, that'll fill in a lot of those question marks for people.
Okay. Oh yeah. I got to get that. I'm like so invested in this one. I'm like, I want the backstory too. That's so great.
Yeah, good.
Okay. So simple overview of the book. Obviously, I can ask what inspired it. Your life obviously inspired it. But what made you move from, gosh, I need to write this down and share it?
Yeah, I think after we moved to the city, you know, after the dust had kind of settled and we were settled in here in the neighborhood, the question that kept coming up in me was, okay, now what? Mm-hmm. You know, okay, we had all this transition. Now we're here. And, you know, the excitement eventually wears off. The kind of anxiety or fear that we had about the unknown wore off, because now we know. Now we know that we had a lot of people kind of warning us that, you know, we were coming into a risky place and, you know, all these things. And now we're here and it's like, okay, this is a wonderful place to be. We're really fortunate to be here. But, you know, now what are we supposed to do? And we knew that we weren't here to plant a church or start a food bank or, you know, we knew that there wasn't a particular thing that we were to do. And we knew that we were coming here to be neighbors. So we knew that we are still on that journey of learning what does it really look like to really be with in meaningful ways the people close to us. Because we know that that's how Jesus lived.
Absolutely. You know,
that's how he lived his life, his ordinary life. I mean, I think wherever we are, no matter who we are and where we live, you know, we are in our ordinary. And so our ordinary kind of looks different from person to person. But where I started to feel some of this, you know, the shifting in the air that, you know, it started to feel like, you know, the problems in the world were getting bigger. And I don't know that they really were getting bigger. I think it was just kind of feeling like that, you know, we're just bombarded with bad news a lot of the time.
We just know more about what's going on now.
We do. We can't escape it.
Right.
And I'm not prone to anxiety in that way as much, but as I started to feel some of that, the only solution for me every single time when I would start to feel like, okay, these problems up here are just way too big. I'm just one woman. There's nothing I can do to solve any of this.
Right.
Where I felt the Lord kind of leading me every time I would get to that place was kind of like, you need to get down on street level and pay attention to your place. And there's probably someone within eyeshot or within arm's reach who you need in your life, who needs you in your life. You know, this is what it looks like to really live meaningfully with the people around us, to not get so caught up in these big issues. Not that we shouldn't care.
Sure.
You know, I think there's a lot of systemic stuff that is broken, and we need to find our place in that. But to really start to live as though making the world better for one person makes the world better.
Yes.
In really practical ways, I started taking walks in my neighborhood. More regularly.
Yeah.
You know, just like, I just want to know this place. This is my corner.
Yep.
And I am here for a reason. And I don't know quite what that reason is. I know I'm not here to save anyone. I know I'm not here to be anybody's hero. I know I'm here for my own growth. You know, all of these things are true. But I also know that life is just better when we walk through it together.
Yep.
You know, I started to notice different things going on. I started to notice, you know, the pain that some of the people around me were suffering through. Because I think, you know, the people around us will tell us what they need. They'll tell us how we can help if we're listening. And, you know, that's kind of the heartbeat behind this book, is to just really get intentional about blurring together what we think of as like, here's my life and here's my ministry. And I keep them both separate. You know, I go do ministry and then I go home. Rather than looking at it like that, what if we just really let it bleed together and we really let it kind of get muddy? What if we really look at ordinary life as like, this is our ministry, and not in a way that, you know, we just get to stay home and worry about ourselves. I mean, I think we need to be really intentional about, you know, making those connections and loving and being loved by the people around us.
Yeah.
So that's the book. You know,
it's
all of these stories. It's the stories of my neighbors, and really meaningful that so many of them supported me, you know, kind of stewarding that story and, you know, writing down the things that I have learned from them, the things that they teach me along the way. It's really special to me.
Really cool, because in the beginning of your book, you say right away, the first thing that you did to have ministry in ordinary places was to just pay attention. You literally just had to take, take the time to just open your eyes and pay attention to what's in front of you. And how easy is that to like look over where the Lord has you and totally miss, you know, the things that he has in front of you, because we're maybe looking farther out or deeper or higher or whatever it is.
Yeah. We're looking for something flashier or, you know, something bigger sometimes. I've never been really wired like a hippie type of person.
Yeah.
Like, it has changed me. And anybody who follows me on social media, especially Instagram, knows this. But I'm always like, look at the sky.
Right.
Look at these trees. Like, I started really paying attention to God's physical world.
Mm-hmm.
And really understanding, like, this is God's creation and I'm a part of it. You know, this is God's gift to me every day. Every day we wake up to a brand new sky. Every day there's something that looks a little bit different as we walk through our neighborhoods and move through our places. And, you know, if I can start to notice that, notice these differences, then all of a sudden this place becomes more beautiful to me.
Yeah.
And as my place becomes more beautiful to me, I love it more.
Yeah.
And as I love my place more, I love the people near me more. Mm. It all does kind of flow together. And it was such a meaningful time for me because, you know, at the point that I really started to get intentional about watching and looking and listening, you know, as we read the Gospels, that's the language we see. Mm-hmm. Jesus noticed. Jesus heard. Jesus saw.
Yes.
So it's thinking like, I wonder if he's trying to tell us something here.
Right, you know? Right.
He gave us these bodies and these five senses, and maybe there's something to this, you know. So it really, for me, became almost like, you know, I'm somebody who's always struggled a little bit with this idea of daily quiet time that people in church like to talk about. I've always, you know, I've never felt like I was really disciplined with that. And now all of a sudden I started to feel like, okay, daily quiet time might look different than what I thought. It might not be closing my bedroom door and being alone in solitude and quiet. And sometimes it is, and sometimes it should be.
Right.
But being with God so often for me means being outside. It means being with people. This is where Jesus spent his time. He, of course, spent time alone, but he lived his life really in proximity with people around him. That tells us something about the character of God. Mm-hmm. And that tells us it's important to be intentional, even for introverts like me.
Yes.
And Corey, we're both introverted.
Oh, hilarious. You know,
we're learning as we go, and it's fun, and it's sad, and it's heartbreaking, and it's beautiful, and it's everything.
Sure.
Which means that it's abundant. Like, this is the abundant life.
Okay, so I want to reference your book, because again, I'm only four chapters in, because I got it on Tuesday, so I'm not a speed reader.
Yeah, it's only been out for a minute.
But gosh, there's just so much I could go over. But there's two things that really jumped out to me that I want to talk about, because it's a really reflection of how Mocha Club looks at the work that they do in Africa. And so on one of the things you talk about, and I'll just read the quote and then we can move on from there. It says, "If our goal is healthy community and loving our neighbors, we need to rethink our approach. Before we can learn from each other, before we can truly grow into a clearer picture of God's good kingdom, we have to fall in love with listening." Woo! Yeah. Truth bomb.
Yeah.
So yeah, one of our main goals at Mocha Club is to encourage people that the first step to be a change maker and to make a positive impact is to listen. I mean, we have got to realize we have two ears and one mouth for a reason.
That's right.
So just talk about more your experience with listening and what you've learned.
Yeah.
And yeah, I would love to hear.
When I launched into kind of this discovery of, you know, what we talked about a moment ago, that we have these five senses to perceive the world around us, it struck me that talking was not one of them.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like, I'll just speak for myself. I'm always kind of running my mouth. I have a lot of words. I have a lot of opinions. I'm not shy in conversation. But I started to realize, you know, as I'm searching for and really inspecting how did Jesus live, you know, he's talking about looking and staying awake to the world around us and listening and, you know, even taste and see. He's never talking about how we should be blabbering to the people around us.
Right.
And that was my clue. Like, perhaps, you know, listening is more important than talking. And we all kind of know it. I'm joking a little bit there. But as we have kind of launched into this new life in our neighborhood and, you know, all of our involvement in the jail and in the public schools and just in the lives of our neighbors, what has changed us is not telling them what we think is right, you know, telling people our own opinions. What changes us is listening to their story.
Yes.
For most of my life, up till moving to this neighborhood, really, I lived in very homogenous places. So I lived in many different locations where everybody around me, for the most part, everybody who is a meaningful part of my life, looked and lived and believed exactly like I do.
Right, right.
And so when we found ourselves here, suddenly we realized, you know, aside from there being a lot of ethnic diversity, aside from the socioeconomic diversity, there was also just a lot of diversity of thought. There was diversity of belief. We started to really love people who were living stories that we didn't know anything about. You know, when all of the immigration conversation started really coming to the forefront, I mean, that means something really different to me as a neighbor of many immigrants and as a neighbor of many people who are feeling the burden in different ways through that. I mean, if I didn't live where I live now, my thoughts and my feelings about this would be different. And so we started to see all of these instances where knowing and loving people who in some way are different, because I think the other thing that we've learned is in most ways, in like the most elemental ways, we're all kind of the same, you know, like, we might look different on paper. We're all kind of wanting the same things. And, you know, we want belonging and we want purpose and we want to be trusted and loved, you know, but to really start to come near and listen to the stories of people who in some ways live differently than we do, it just split our world open. You know, traveling to Ethiopia, that's an example of, I remember powerful moments. I still think about some of the moments on that trip, you know, talking to these women who live a really, in some ways, a very different life than I live. And listening to the way they see the world and the way they see God and the way they see their place in the world. I mean, when we get close enough to really listen to people, it will change us.
Tell us more about your experience just with sitting down with someone that looks totally different from you and realizing, like, gosh, that's so much more beneficial than someone that looks just like me.
I have many neighbors who are white middle-class people. I do. And, you know, the neighborhood continues to change and grow, and we love our neighbors. You know, it's not like we sort of segment people into different categories. So no matter what the difference is, I think it's so important to look for the difference. So even in my neighbors where, you know, they might in a lot of ways look just like me on paper. But what is the thing that's different? Because I think we do a real disservice when in church settings or, you know, in church small groups or Bible studies or whatever, when we segment ourselves according to likeness, and that's our impulse, is to like, okay, you're the new married group and you're the empty nester group and you're the, you know, on and on. We group ourselves according to hobbies or whatever the case may be. We end up creating these echo chambers where we're all kind of on the same page. And so what I find is that we end up making small talk. And for somebody who hates small talk, with that person being me, I mean, it's so much richer to go to the thing that is different and to ask questions and to be ready to listen. You know, people talk about finding their people, and I understand that. Because there are, you know, I mentioned that earlier, you know, finding our adoption people, finding people who have lived through that. That's important. And I get that. But there's something to be said, too, for just who's closest. It doesn't matter if you have a lot in common with them. What if they're just the closest person and you make them your people and you become their people? That, I think God is really waiting to surprise us in those encounters.
Okay, well, I have loved this conversation. I know we both got to go quickly, but wanted to just say thank you so much for taking time to share. And gosh, I just feel like we have similar heartbeats, so this is really encouraging for me to sit here with you.
We do. I knew it would be fun. And I have to say, I have loved being a monthly supporter of Mocha Club since that trip I took to Ethiopia 5 years ago. I mean, we are just, you know, we are proud of the work that's being done. And I saw it for myself. I saw it with my own eyes. And it just, it made me a believer. So yeah, it's an honor to kind of be with you guys in that. So keep it up.
Thank you. And thank you so much for being part of it. We can't do it without our members. So you are such a vital part. So good to see you, Shannon.
You too.
Thank you for spending time with me. And we'll talk soon.
That sounds good.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bye.
See ya.
Bye-bye. Okay, listeners, thank you so much for taking the time to check in and listen to my conversation with Shannon. Gosh, that was such a blessing to just sit with her and hear her heart. And I hope you were as encouraged as I was. So if you are interested, which you should be after that conversation, it was amazing. You can buy her book, The Ministry of Ordinary Places. I got my copy off Amazon, but I'm sure it's in any other popular booksellers that you know of. But if you want to look online, just type in The Ministry of Ordinary Places by Shannon Martin, and you'll see all sorts of options to get her book. But I highly encourage you to do it. Gosh, it's been such an inspirational thing for me to read. And again, I'm only 4 chapters in, and it's mostly all red highlighter. So there you go. And again, if you are just tuning in to Changing the Conversation, we have a lot of other episodes that we have launched. So please go back and listen in, learn more about the Mocha Club and African leadership and what our organizations do on the continent of Africa, and subscribe. We are going to be launching more podcasts in the future, looking to launch them bi-monthly, 2 times a month. So subscribe to make sure you don't miss out on conversations. We have really important conversations with our partners all over the continent of Africa, with friends, artists, writers here in the States, just places and people that are changing the conversation in their own lives. So tune in and learn more.